kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
That's a way to kick off a show.
Fucking cats. What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. joining to start things off on this reviews episode, Tim Ekibis. How are you doing?
Good. I'm allergic to cats. I don't have cats, personally, because I'm allergic to them.
So me spraying my cat to get it to shut the fuck up is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever. I'm not allergic to its sound. I don't think that could transfer over the internet. But yeah, it's like we had cats growing up and I was mostly fine then, as long as I didn't like rub my face into the cat. But then after I went to college and being away from cats, I lost my cat tolerance. And now cats are just a disaster for me. Even though like literally earlier today, I was like, man, maybe when we have less dogs, we should think about getting a cat. And I can go through the grueling stage of like rebuilding a tolerance to cats or a cat.
I don't know if you remember the old fest parties that we used to have.
Yes.
Josh.
Oh yes,
Josh Klingerman.
I'm not sure if you remember him. I know his face if I saw it.
Well, he's like deathly allergic to cats. Mm-hmm. To the point where he would visit for like a half hour and have to leave because it was just getting to him so bad. And he now owns 3 cats because he gets shots.
Oh, yeah. Like, mine never were, like, that bad. It's just, like, my eyes get really watery and itchy, and that sucks. Yeah.
Always fun.
Yeah.
Cats.
Fucking cats.
Anyway, Vidya Games. We should probably talk about Vidya Games, huh?
I guess so. Yeah, boy, were our Survivor Series picks not good because we picked a close 4-3 decision for Raw, but apparently the only thing that got SmackDown a win was someone not telling the agent that Raw was supposed to win that match.
That is depressing.
Which is a bummer because it came down to like the Revival and the Usos, and man, the Revival could sure use a win.
That would have been a good rub for them, but
on that main roster. But yeah, so now Raw is 6-0 undefeated and nobody paying it. I don't know. Whatever.
It was depressing. But hey, TakeOver was pretty goddamn good.
TakeOver was excellent because those are always amazing. And you know, honestly, like the singles matches at Survivor Series, I thought were quite good. The Rollins Nakamura match was pretty solid. Wasn't like amazing, but I really liked the Ronda Charlotte match and the Daniel Bryan Brock Lesnar match. I did like that stuff. It felt different.
They didn't feel like your normal scripted weekly episodic programming with those matches. They felt unique. Something about it.
Someone was saying, well, like the Charlotte Rousey fight was very like fighty and like very back and forth. Like there wasn't like the usual kind of WWE main event style cadence to it. It was really kind of like a hold for hold back and forth. Ronda's bleeding. And yeah, it was, I really liked that match. That was cool. And I like how it had a non finish. Yeah, just Charlotte beating the crud out of Ronda.
I didn't watch Raw yet, so I don't know if the crowd continued to shit on Ronda or not, but it was kind of weird how they were booing Ronda after everything that happened. You thought that they would give her a little bit of a round of applause, but...
Well, I think the problem is just, like, you have Ronda standing in opposition to Becky Lynch, and nobody should be there right now if you want them to get cheered. Like, Becky Lynch is, like, the most over person in the company right now. And yeah, it's like Nia Jax was getting nuclear freaking heat,
which sucks because then the people backstage are like, oh yeah, they're really behind this Nia Jax character's heel actions. It's like, no, people hate her for what she did.
Yeah, no, I think what they're leaning. I'm glad they're leaning into that because she was just kind of like, I don't know, tweenering a bit before, but now she's like blowing off her knuckles and just acting like a total jackass. And it really works. And I hope they just keep leaning into it until Becky shows up and plasters her.
I hope so.
Anyways.
Either that or Naya's going to face turn in 2 weeks and act like nothing ever happened.
Well, that, yeah. That could always be a thing.
Oh, man. Wouldn't be the first thing that has gone forgotten by...
Oh, I also loved how they like, the Riddle-Cassius Ohno match, which they made a deal of, like, oh, this wasn't scheduled for the card, but, like, us and several other commentators I saw definitely made a pick for that match, just assuming it was going to be on the card.
And it was there.
And it was there for all of a second, but...
And it was an amazing 5 seconds.
It was great. It was really fun. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Anyway, video games. We should probably talk about that.
Video games, singular, yes.
You were here to talk about a game. You were leading things off with the Switch release of Forgotten Anne, developed by Throughline Games, published by Square Enix Collective, released November 9th on the Switch for $19.99. A copy of this game was provided for free from Square Enix for the purpose of this review, which, as I mentioned the last time we read that spiel, that is how every game on this show is handled. But they want it. They want us to say it. So
I was about to say, is Square making you say that?
Yeah, it's in. It's in their FTC guidelines. Like, you must disclose that this was provided to you free of charge. Like, we don't cover things that we pay for ourselves. That's we have too much other stuff to cover the way it is. But I could understand why we have to say
it. It's because like, just social media creators. You know, there was a line, or there is a line there that gets blurred when people are. Because now, you know, not to say we don't have opinions that matter, but, you know, we're not like professional journalists, basically, is the thing. Like, we're technically influencers.
I don't know who we're influencing.
But. Oh, God. I hope we're influencing lots of people on their game decisions, honestly. Or at least, you know,
a couple here and there.
Here and there. I hope people are, that we're making a difference.
Yeah, but like I said, copy of the game was provided for free from Square Enix for the purpose of the review. Thanks, Square Enix. Step into a hand-animated realm of wonder in which everyday objects take on a life of their own. Uncover the Forgotten Ling's mysteries and harness magical forces as you embark on a quest to return home. Tim, tell us about Forgotten Anne.
Oh, Forgotten Anne. Man, this came out on other platforms in like the spring, and I had not heard any of it at all. I did not hear about it. It totally passed me by.
Can you say you forgot about it?
I did. I couldn't forget because I never remembered. Sip. So I'm guessing like this is, you know, it seems like an indie game that is being published by Square. Like it must be some arm of their, I don't know. They're just picking up indie games and publishing them like many companies do these days.
Yeah, they have the Square Enix Collective, which is basically their indie branch where...
Yeah.
You know, they aren't official Square releases that I'm aware of, but they have the backing of Square and, you know, that helps get extra eyes on them.
Yeah.
So, however that goes.
Extends their portfolio.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is a 2D platformer adventure game. so you play as Anne, who has theoretically been forgotten because you are in the land of all things that are forgotten. So... You lose a sock and it ends up here. So you have a lot of inanimate objects that are now animate. You have objects. They talk and they have personalities and they do work and stuff. So, yeah, you have conversations with things like a scarf or a dresser or a refrigerator. How does somebody forget a refrigerator? Like, man, there was something in our kitchen. What the heck went here? I just don't know. It's the refrigerator that Indiana Jones hid in that everyone wants to forget about. It must be that one. So yeah, anyways, you have this like whimsical, magical land where you are Anne, and you are the enforcer. You work for this guy, Master Bonku. Yeah, I think that's what his name is. I almost want to say Bonfu. And you appear to be the only two humans around. And Master Bonku, not to color your expectations, seems like kind of a suspiciously like a dick. I don't know why I trust that guy. So yeah, you're the enforcer. It's your job to kind of keep the Forgotten Lings in line. Bonku is promising They're building an ether bridge that will take them back to the real world and back to the humans that forgot them. But it seems like a pretty like Iron Fist society. Like he has all these creatures under his thumb. At least that's how it came to start looking after a while. That you maybe weren't doing all these Forgotlings any favors here. The game opens with a rebel attack that wakes up Anne, and she puts on her gear and goes out to start getting things sorted out. So the way the game plays out is a 2D platformer adventure. You have some puzzles and like some dialogue decisions. There's no inventory to keep track of, so it's not a adventure game in the sense of, you know, you're picking up all these items and then figuring out how to use them to solve puzzles and progress. They pretty much give you the resources you need within whatever area you're in. Most of the puzzles take the shape of she has this little doodad on her wrist, which she can use to like pull energy out of canisters or by vaporizing Forgotlings.
Damn.
Yeah, they're like one of the first encounters in the game, which I'll talk about because it's like the first encounter of the game is a rebel comes into your tower, basically. Well, what Anne assumes is a rebel, which is a scarf, a rebel scarf that she thinks is a rebel that got past all like the guards and barricades and is there to cause some trouble. And you can, you know, this scarf is begging for its life as you get information out of it. And you can either let the scarf go or vaporize the fucker. And I vaporized it and I was like, ooh, that felt really mean to do that. And the little dialogue came up that said, this could have gone differently. And I'm like, yeah, it probably could have. I'm going to stick to this one, but it's going to inform. Maybe I won't be quite so trigger happy moving forward. And also just right there, moments later on that I like that one thing I don't like about adventure games when you're making decisions is when it pops that dialogue that says, you know, so-and-so will remember this could have gone differently, whatever. It was kind of established in The Walking Dead, and a lot of other adventure games kind of have followed that thing to let you know when there's branching points. And I kind of prefer not to think about that stuff, because whenever that pops up, I'm like, and then I'm sitting there.
What could
like,
I have done differently?
Yeah, maybe I should have done that differently, and I'm worrying about that rather than just engaging with the story. But I think it's just there at the beginning to kind of let you know that your actions can make a difference in how the game goes, because I definitely didn't see it in encounters later on where I'm like, okay, I probably could have been frying some Forgotlings here and chose not to. But yeah, the dialogue choices usually boil down to like kind of being a bit more empathetic to the Forgotling condition or being like, hey, tell me what I want to know or I'm going to zap you. Because they're definitely afraid of you. You are an intimidating presence amongst these objects. So yeah, puzzles take the form of like manipulating energy around. Oh, that's right. That's what I was talking about. I tangented there. Yeah, so you'll pull energy out of things to power machines and that's basically it. And sometimes it involves like trying to move platforms around or figuring out how to get energy here to there, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes there's some timing based things, which I'll. Yeah. So one of the things about this game is it looks fucking great. Like if nothing else about this game, like it is phenomenal to look at. Like the hand-drawn world, the characters look great and animate really great. The environments are really detailed and multi-layered. It's just like really awesome to look at top to bottom. And I really can't emphasize that enough, because that really, I feel, is the biggest selling point of the game. Like when you asked me about the code and I looked at the trailer, I was like, holy shit, like this really looks something. It's like a hand animated, you know, think like Disney-ish, maybe not quite Disney. That is what it looks like, and it looks great. But with that, there comes a certain clunkiness. You know, if you remember games like, it makes me think of like Prince of Persia or Flashback, where you had these really well animated main characters, but it wasn't always, let's say, a joy to move them around. You know,
yeah.
Because and the thing with Forgotten Anne in particular is yeah, you'll be like running along and then you go to like stop, but she takes like a couple more steps because the animation has to wind down. And then you're like turning around and like moving back to the thing that you might have just ran past to get that.
Yeah, when you're Red Dead 2 had the same thing going on where like everyone has momentum can't just stop.
Heard that. Yeah, I haven't played that game. I don't like Rockstar games, so take that as you will. But anyways, Forgotten Anne, not in Red Dead 2. So yeah, like you end up with some puzzles that need really some pretty precise timing, or you have to do things pretty quickly, and that can be a real pain in the ass. Just because of how the character animates, like if you need to kind of jump up on a platform, that can be a little bit imprecise, but it's mostly just kind of moving left and right back and forth. Just like, okay. And there's in any instance where you do need to kind of jump around, you need to jump over a gap or whatever. It's not like you die. You just fall down and you have to go up and do it again. So it could be kind of annoying, especially like you have pretty early on, you get this set of wings, which helps you jump higher or further over gaps. And you'll end up with instances where you have to like run and have your wing. You have to hold a button to have your wings out. You hold a button to run, and then you have to hit the edge of the platform and jump. And it's just like, my hand. What? Like, come on. What am I doing here? And then it's like, oh, crap. I didn't have the wings out, or like you need energy in order to power your wings. So that's like, oh crap, I got to go back down there to grab some energy. Just, it can sometimes be a bit of a chore to deal with how good this game looks, which sounds ridiculous, but it's like, okay, I can't just like quickly run down because I forgot to flip the switch or whatever. It's like, okay, no, I have to sit here and watch her walk down these stairs and it looks really nice, but I have to watch it happen and then go down these. And there was only one instance I can speak of where I got a little bit, just like a little bit stuck because I didn't realize I had to push one way to go up a set of stairs instead of like, because the stairs were in the foreground, right? So I was like, oh, I have to push down to move into the foreground towards the stairs, but I actually needed to push up to go up the stairs, up to move it. I don't know, perception thing. It just got me.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, but it's the kind of game where you can maybe get a little bit lost with like what is in the foreground, the background. Like that was also an issue I had with Ori and the Blind Forest. When things can get so exquisitely detailed in 2D, it can sometimes be difficult to tell what's what. Not as much of an issue as it was in Ori and the Blind Forest, because you're not going to die in this game like I did in Ori and the Blind Forest a lot. The story basically follows Anne as she is trying to find the rebels and ultimately kind of figure out, you know, you learn more about the world and your place in it. Because, like, you know, pretty early on, I'm like, okay, well, these are all objects that people forgot. Like, who forgot about Anne? How did a whole person get here? You know, intriguing, whimsical question. It's pretty good overall. I really just can't emphasize enough just like how what a treat the game is to look at.
Just beautiful.
It's really beautiful to look at. It's not always a treat to play. It is what it is, but there's the biggest penalty to you is your time, basically, when it's actually being aggravating, because it's just like, oh gosh, I know what I have to do. I just have to do it again. And I have to watch this gorgeously well animated character move around and do this stuff again.
Oh, poor you.
Poor you. I mean, you know, it can be tedious. If you're, especially for me, as I'm generally more of a gameplay focused player, and can get bogged down in adventure games real easily and just be like, no, God, I just want to be moving along, you know? It can sometimes be just like a bit of a drag. But, you know, like I said, it looks great. The characters look great. The voice acting is good and charming. There was one thing that sounded really weird to me, but either way, one of the things that did bug me is like the subtitles are just in like this stark yellow text, which I don't think really matched up with the rest of the game. I mean, like, yellow subtitles isn't like a something I haven't seen before, but I just, I don't know, maybe if the text could have been like a bit more stylized or a different color or something like that. I'm sure
just it's something to fit they the game with, better.
Yeah, it just really kind of stuck out like a sore thumb and didn't like fit with the environments. But hey, at least this game had subtitles.
True.
Even though there's no defined industry standard, you know?
Which there really should be.
No, I think it's just like you have subtitles and things because everything has subtitles in it. And you're not a dick, Activision. Come on, man. Like, oh, there's no industry standard for subtitles. You just don't want to spend the money. Give me a break. Lazy come on. Bastards. Seriously. So dumb. Get with it. What the hell doesn't have subtitles? You're freaking 2018. Give me a break. Yeah, it's just like a real slap in the face of, well, whatever. That's other games and not this game.
Anyway, all things considered, $20 on this one, the pros, the cons, what do you think of it?
Yeah, no, I think it's a buy. Like it's not a short game. Like it's probably around 7 hours long on average. My timer seemed to get it has one of those in-game timers that doesn't seem to be very accurate, or it keeps clock when the system's in sleep mode. Something like that, because I went from like, oh, I'm like an hour in to, oh, I'm 58 hours in and I haven't played it in a day. That doesn't seem right. But yeah, I mean, especially for, yeah, if you're into adventure games, don't overlook this thing because it's great and is different than other stuff that's out there. Really nice game.
Awesome. Sounds good.
But I will put a but here that if you're not into adventure games, you are more gameplay focused, that it's probably more of a try it, but just for to cover the bases. But yeah, it's good.
You got to cover the bases.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like some, like, you know, I feel like if you're not as into adventure games, you can play through stuff like Gone Home because it's pretty brisk to play through. And pretty simple and straightforward. Like, there are those games that I think can cross boundaries, but I'm not sure this is really one of them just because it is a bit slower on the gameplay and a bit longer, but that's fine. That's not like a detriment. Depends on who you're talking to.
Very true. Well, Tim, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff and chatting rassles some more. Yeah. Do you have?
Well, we don't usually get to follow up on our predictions. You know?
I know. It was a nice treat to have you on to follow up on how fucking awful Survivor Series was. So, do you have any
great Takeover was?
Yeah, Takeover. Oh, so good. So, any final thoughts before we move on?
No, I got nothing.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Achtung Cthulhu Tactics, developed by Auroch Digital, published by Ripstone, released November 20th on PS4, November 23rd on Xbox One for $24.99. In this raging secret war across Europe, an untold darkness spreads deep beneath the earth and throughout the Forest of Fear. The unknown lurks in the shadows, and you must claim victory at any cost, because while Nazi factions terrorize these lands, they are not the darkest foe you face. Checking this one out, and coincidentally wearing a Cthulhu shirt the day I asked him to cover this, Royal Sefton.
That's right, baby.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I still love the fact that I asked if you wanted to cover this game, and you sent a picture of yourself wearing the shirt.
Yes. I'm
like, I'll take that as a yes.
Crack my ass up, man. I had to send you a picture of that because I couldn't believe it. Yes, finally!
It paid off. Wearing this shirt has paid off.
Actually, wearing that shirt has paid off many times over. It's hilarious because it's like one out of 20 or 30 people I run into are like, oh my god, that's nice, you know, they're laughing, and it, yeah, everybody else thinks I'm wearing a Coca-Cola shirt or something, so it's pretty hilarious.
So what is this game? What is Achtung Cthulhu Tactics?
Well, Achtung Cthulhu Tactics.
Achtung. Oh, I'm saying it wrong.
I don't know, actually. I'm going to make an assumption. I've heard both, and I hear people say Cthulhu. I hear people say Cthulhu. I guess for me, because of Metallica, I always say Cthulhu. You know, just full disclosure. But yeah, so what it's about. It's essentially a game of you versus the Nazis, you being a squad of four allied, in a turn-based tactical infiltration sim. And Nazis have apparently allied themselves with the Black Sun, and thus they are resurrecting all kinds of eldritch horrors from Lovecraftian lore. Kind of plays out a lot like, sure, it's a period piece. Yeah, it's historical, like 300, you know.
Accuracy is key.
That's right. So, yes, it is alternative history, shall we say. And, you know, it takes place toward the latter portion of World War II in 44. And you touch down there's two characters, and you meet up with two more during the tutorial, and that becomes your core squad. Different parts of the Allied forces. You have like someone from France, and I want to say an American. I can't remember now. They all talk and they all mumble as you do things, so I can't pick out all the accents. I don't remember exactly who they are, which unfortunately had. Elucidates one of the faults I have with the game, but I'll continue on first. So it plays a lot like XCOM, square tile based. You rotate 90 degrees. You can have a cone of basically wherever you move your pieces matters. You have that cone of vision for setting up, say, Overwatch in case an enemy moves in front. You're, you know, standing position, take fire. You've got primary and occasionally secondary fire based on momentum. And momentum is one of the play mechanics in addition to action points whereby you can do additional things, whether it's raising fallen teammates or pulling out a pistol or a sidearm of some kind and shooting your enemies. And a couple of the characters have some interesting skills that you develop through a skill tree that kind of looks like six spokes in the middle of a wheel. And you just kind of go in a direction and roll with it. It's basically kind of very much reminded me of XCOM as I was playing it. A lot of the same core mechanics. That's not to say that it is XCOM. It obviously is quite different, not just in the backdrop, but in many ways the execution is dissimilar too. But it's very... I don't really want to say linear, but I guess that's kind of true. It plays out in a very dungeon crawly kind of way. Like you're going through a forest and you have a very set path and you're constantly moving from cover to cover. When combat begins, you break cover, you're pretty much guaranteeing yourself a death. But it has some interesting mechanics that differ from a lot of other games of its ilk. Besides having that momentum ability where you build up momentum with successes and it's just kind of compound interest. You get this ability to do other stuff. And, you know, as long as you continue to keep winning, the hits keep on coming. Your characters have luck based on that as well. As long as they remain lucky, they don't take any real damage. It's kind of like a shield. But as things start to take a darker turn, or if you start to get your ass kicked, your characters fall into stress. And stress provides a negative characteristic to the game, whereby, and this kind of ties in with the whole Cthulhu mythos and like, you know, cosmic horror type thing where madness could set in, maybe not to the extent that, you know, you might expect from another Cthulhu mythos game. But as you get stressed out, and if you start fighting, something other than Nazis, shall we say, bad things happen. Bad things happen, and unfortunately, it's not as inventive as I had hoped in that regard, but it can be things like you start reloading your weapon prematurely, or you start taking shots, or you just waste AP because you stagger or get shell-shocked. Kind of ties into one of the things about the game that just, it's an overarching theme that bothers me. Yeah, I know. I got to get it off my chest, man. It feels like there is this wonderful concept and this fairly shallow execution, right? And that sort of seems to be the overarching theme of the whole game, unfortunately. You have what basically is mostly a Nazi killing simulator for most of it. And I think that's wonderful. I'm all about punching Nazis, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, of course, you should always. But... on the other hand, You have very few of these botentacled creatures that just kind of glop around occasionally and don't really play as large of a role as I had hoped. When it comes to getting stressed, the effects are usually not terribly unfavorable besides lost AP. That can be pretty injurious because, frankly, the game can get pretty difficult if all of your characters are pretty severely stressed. Yeah. Suddenly your turns get a lot more difficult to take because instead of having your 12 action points, you have like six. And that's no good because you might be able to get off one shot instead of two, or if you move, you're not going to be able to shoot. Bad things happen, right? But it feels after a while quite monotonous. You know, let's throw another squad of Nazis out there in the woods. You try to pick them off one by one, hope you don't die, and repeat. I think just more variation, more variation. Yeah, that's essentially the capsule review. More variation needed. It just would have been cool to see it develop further outward and go a little bit deeper too. Like your weapons choices are very few and far between. Your skill trees aren't very interesting, or the skills are mostly useless. There is a great one of the characters there's a French woman. She has this ability to like do sort of a drain life or other willpower attacks. She's essentially the game's magic user. Very useful, but yeah, it feels like because of all of these things that are underdeveloped, it's like there's a good game waiting to be made here, and it's just not quite there. And that's the part that frustrates me about it, because so many things about it read well, you know, they look decent, they sound decent, but it's just not complete yet.
Yeah. I dabbled with it a bit myself. I could definitely see where you're coming from. I would have liked to see things get crazier quicker.
Yes.
Like the weirdness of the game. You're playing a game set in a war against the Nazis with Cthulhu or Cthulhu. you kind of want the crazy shit to happen quicker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And there's just a lot of foreplay as you build up to that, and it's just like, ah, come on, I wanted more than this. Really? okay.
Bring your hand higher up my thigh, please.
To get loose about it, yes, I did use the word foreplay, sorry. So yes, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. It feels like there's more build up than action there. And I lament that missed opportunity. Now, if this is a game with a lot of potential for community growth or DLC, then I could see this really becoming a bigger, more complete package. That would be, I think, a really thrilling thing. And I understand that there's also a pen and paper version of this game that was originally created, I think by Kickstarter a few years ago or something. Somebody Kickstarted it. Same group. I'm not sure. I didn't do much research into that piece, but what I do know is that as a tabletop game, it sounds awesome. And that's partly because you're putting a lot more power into the hands of those who would conduct the game, you know, a GM or something. With a very rigid set path and kind of, you know, a very limited amount of development, whether of story or of character, of plot, it just feels like there's just too little going on to really make it a really full-bodied and complete experience.
Yeah.
So it's an unfortunate to give it that sort of a disappointing review because, like I said, the potential is really there, and I was definitely excited for this. And I think that if there is an interest in, you know, like Steam Workshop or something, you know, because there's a PC port of it as well, some kind of modding community that could really take this and run with it, I think that it could make it a much better game.
Or possibly even a sequel. If this one does well enough to spawn a sequel, they might be able to just dive into the crazy right away in one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. This could be a good launch pad for something better, you know, a sequel, follow-up, some kind of spinoff.
Good starting point for a franchise.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not to, you know, undercut the rest of the effort, because there's a lot of stuff that I think is really nice about the game that's fairly polished. Nothing that really stands out as particularly janky or really underdone. I did see one kind of weird text bug where there's actually like a variable in line with text, and that doesn't look right. But that's kind of the rarity rather than the rule. I don't go looking for those things normally.
Yeah. Well, overall, $25 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of a lukewarm try it. I can't give it a buy it because I think for $25, there just isn't quite enough game here yet. Yeah, there are 10 main missions, there are side missions, but if something is done to reduce the monotony, then I would be more eager to recommend it. And just as it sits, I don't feel like it's worth $25.
Makes sense. I unfortunately agree. I was hoping for a lot more out of this one. I'm enjoying what I'm playing, but it just doesn't feel like a must-own kind of game.
Right. And it's one of those things, again, with just a little more polish on the apple, just a little details that, you know, in all these different directions could make it a much more whole game. You know, more character development, more weapons.
I think the release window doesn't do it any favors either, just because there's so much other stuff coming out right now that this one kind of is going to get lost in the shuffle, I think.
That's definitely a good point. Sometimes time is everything, you know?
Yeah. So. Oh, well. Well, Royal, it is always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
On the game? No, not really. I have final thoughts.
Well, what are they?
Do the turkey.
No one's going to get that, and I don't care. All right, next game to talk about is called Dungeon Crowley, developed and published by Animiv's Game Studio, released October 11th on Steam Early Access for $18.99. Dungeon Crowley blends RPG and FPS elements all together while providing seamless full multiplayer campaign where players must cooperate through procedural dungeons, follow through the delusions and discoveries of a teacher which engages with the occult while facing financial problems. Checking this one out, CJ Greenwood, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty not great. I don't feel so good.
Why?
My stomach is just, you know, like, hey, fuck you. So
nice, so you're doing a review.
Yep, so, well, a preview, because this is very early into its life.
Well, you're doing coverage. How about that?
Yes, I will be covering the game.
Oh, CJ, so what is this game?
Well, one second. I'm sorry. Yeah, go for it. Sorry. Just one second. They'll be done in a second. Okay, I think we're good. All right. Dungeon Crowley, first of all, I call it it's not Crawley to me, it is Crawley, because that is a fun pun and I like it. I give them props for the naming, though, for real. That gets points right there, just because it's a really fun name to say. Dungeon Crowley. But it is exactly that. It's a dungeon crawler with, I guess, FPS and RPG elements. I mean, it's definitely an FPS, but the RPG elements are kind of just basic. It's basically just a small level system that you get XP, and then you level up and you can put one point into either strength, something else that affects your range. I think it's, what is that called again? It's a thing archers have in D&D.
Agility?
That's it. And then you have your magicka. And so it's basically, which kind of weapon do you like using? Okay, put your point in that then. That's all that is to it. And then they have gear, and you kill enemies and they drop gear. So if you get like a helmet, you can have better armor, and that armor actually ranges in a percentage. So the armor can be 8% to 10%. That means every hit you have a chance to take in between those percentages, and then it takes that damage off. So it's not always going to take a full percentage of a damage off. That armor may not be as effective in certain situations.
Mm.
It's an interesting little tidbit, but for the most part, it's actually not that complicated. And in fact, I would say the combat is about as complicated as Crypt of the Serpent King.
Okay.
In the sense that it's basically, there's one strategy that works, and that's just to run backwards while shooting them with arrows. That's about all you really want to do, unless of course you're on the first level and there's a doorway in which is closed, because the enemies will sense you through the doorway and start trying to come at you, but the door's closed, so they can't. But their heads will poke out of the door, and then you can use a melee weapon and kill them behind the door. So that's how I took out the entire first level up until the boss room. You just basically trigger the enemy, and then you just smack them with the club through the wall.
So you just cheese them to death.
Yep. Eventually that'll be solved. Like I said, this game's super early. It's 0.27.10. So basically, in layman's terms, 0.2 is what I would call that. So it's early. It's super early. I don't estimate that this game is going to come out for probably about a year or so. But it's a fun little way to kind of support the game before it comes out. It is a little bit on the pricier side with $18.99. I'm not sure if that's really worth it right now, considering there's a lot of problems with it being this early, like the being able to just completely cheese all the enemies, the fact that there's no dodge or anything. It's just basically run backwards and shoot them with a crossbow. It's the only strategy that really works. I had a huge problem where on the second level I couldn't progress any further. The game glitched.
Oh, boy.
And so there was no exit to the second level, and instead it just kept making me repeat the second level.
That's weird.
The enemies never leveled up, but I kept leveling up. So eventually I became so overpowered for these enemies that it became boring because I couldn't progress. And I'm not sure, it's all randomly generated, so I'm not sure if it just forgot to generate the exit or generated the exit behind a wall that I couldn't get to.
Oh, man.
But either way, I could not leave the second level. And I didn't see any other reports on like the discussion boards or anything about it. So I guess I'm the only one that's had this problem so far.
Lucky you.
Yeah. So I got to see two levels, and I spent about an hour and a half on the second level. It was a fun level. It was just a graveyard. It was cool, though. I mean, I like the fact that every few steps you walk, there's some zombies that come up from the ground.
Nice.
I'll say the one thing this game does better than most horror games is those enemies come out of nowhere, and then you just turn around real quick, and it's like, oh, shit, there's an enemy behind me. Like, they scare you because you just don't see them coming, and sometimes they don't make any noise. Like, the game's supposed to activate music whenever you get into a fight, and normally it does it fine, but sometimes it doesn't do it. And then you're just left with, oh my god, there he is. And you get a jump scare.
Nice. So Cole would like the game.
Maybe if she gets past the second level.
Did you try starting over to see if it was just shit luck that you didn't get an exit generated?
I did, and then the game crashed. And I was like, well, this has been fun. It's early. It's early. That's what I keep reminding myself. It's very early.
Very early.
I will say, on the opposite side of Crypt of the Serpent King, at least there's more than like three weapons. You do have a lot of weapon variety to pick up, and there's little modifiers on the weapons that you need identity tokens to discover, so you can't use the weapon until you've discovered it. Because obviously, if you pick up a club, you don't know what to do with that until you discover it.
Yeah, obviously.
Obviously, I wouldn't realize, like, well, I can still beat people to death with it, even if I don't know what its secret, like, ability is. But no. There is some fun stuff in there, though. Like, I do like the weapon system and the fact that you can get so many different ranged weapons, including throwable javelins. And there's no such thing as ammo in the game. It's just your magicka, or your willpower is what they call it, actually. So I guess you're fighting them with your will.
Hey, whatever works.
And basically what happens is if you drain that willpower, your attacks just become very garbage. You have to wait for it to recharge.
Mm.
Once it recharges, then all of a sudden you're going to start doing full damage again, and you'll be able to use the abilities of the weapons again. Like, totally didn't say it anywhere on the crossbow, but when you shoot a crossbow, it's a flame arrow.
Nice.
Which is pretty neat. It's a fun little thing. It's just, it doesn't say that anywhere. That's not a special ability. That's just all crossbows apparently have flaming arrows.
Hey, that works.
Yeah, I have no complaints about that. And you can also, they drop a lot of health potions, which is good because they actually do a lot of damage. Like, if they manage to hit you in your running backwards strategy, which is rare, they will at least drop plenty of potions for you to pick up. I think by the end of my second run, when I finally gave up on the second level, I had like 30-some health potions.
Nice.
So there was no chance I was ever dying, especially when I was like level 18, and they were like level 4. The XP does definitely not change based on level. Like, you're still going to get a good amount of XP for killing the level 3 enemies. And you can go backwards. Like, that's one thing I tried as well. I tried going back to level 1 to see if maybe level 3 was connected to level 1 for some reason, and you had to just go through level 2 to get the key. Because at the end of the level, you get a key to progress. There's just no doorway. So I assumed maybe, just maybe, they put it in level 1. And so I went back. Couldn't find it, went through all the area. It's actually a shockingly small map. Like, they do a good job of making the maps look bigger than they really are. And so you go through all of that. I went back. I was like, nope, it's not here. And then I went back through level 2 one more time, killed the challenge room again, which basically is just a bunch of waves of enemies that are kind of powerful, and they trap you in small rooms, so you have to like fend yourself off against these things. And then eventually, after a few waves of enemies, a bigger guy will come, and he's going to be the highest level, and he's basically the boss of the floor.
And you kicked his ass because you were so overleveled.
I did. And even the first time when I wasn't overleveled, I kicked his ass because I walked backwards with a crossbow. So that's all you need to do to beat the game.
As long as it generates the end of the level.
Correct.
Gotcha. So overall, $19 on this. Is this a game worth keeping your eye on?
I'd say it definitely has potential once there's some fixes implicated. For now, I don't know if $18.99 is really the price point that the game should be going for. I feel like it would be much more acceptable at like $12 right now. Mm-hmm. But as it stands, it's a little, you only want to pick this up if you really want to see this go somewhere. Because like, you have to have hope in this game to pick it up at the price it is.
Yeah, it's fun, it's still, but it's so early.
Yeah, it's very early, and you don't want to see one of those cases where you invest your money into it and then it nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of fun to be had if it works correctly, but it is also very basic. The combat system, like I said, is only slightly more impressive than Crypt of the Serpent King, which we all know how that went. Cats are now fighting right above me.
Nice.
Don't know if you heard that.
Yeah, I heard it.
I figured.
Oh, man. Well, CJ, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
I think I summed up how I feel about it pretty well. It's all right.
All right, moving on. We got Pernell Vaughn joining us. Pernell, how's it going?
It's going okay, you know, prepping for the big day where I get to eat my weight times 2 and then regret it 4 hours later. How about you?
I thought you were talking about Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's just every day to me.
Just gump down.
I don't need a special occasion for that shit.
Yeah, but on Wednesday, you'll get like turkey and weird messed up you wouldn't typically eat.
True.
Unless you're going to Wawa on a regular basis, but we know you're not a Wawa man.
Fuck that.
You're a speedy man. What is it, speedy?
I'm a sheets man.
Sheetsman. You're a sheetsman.
I'm telling you, you got to come visit me so you can see what sheets is all about.
Aw, sheets.
Aw, sheets, son.
If people aren't saying that up there, I would be very surprised. Aw, sheets. Aw, sheets.
You hungry, man? Yeah, I'm hungry. What are you hungry for? Aw, sheets. Aw, sheets.
You know what I'm talking about. Oh, sheets.
Aw, sheets. You know it. I had them for breakfast today.
I've been getting that way lately, too. I'm hoping this weekend I can reset myself because I've been doing Wawa for breakfast because it's like a couple blocks from my job, so it's convenient to get lunch. So it's like breakfast Wawa, lunch Wawa, and then some days, dinner Wawa. I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I'm getting to the point where like, I'm tired of Wawa's food, and that's not even supposed to happen, which means I'm eating it too much. I need to get off. I gotta start prepping and cooking at night so I can have it in the evening when I get home from work or something. But it's just not how it's supposed to be.
When it's too much, instead of wah wah, it's wah wah.
Wah wah wah. Wah.
Though something we need to tackle, because we always discuss it when you're on. Did you get a lot of snow last week?
We got a surprise amount, but it disappeared quickly enough. Like, we got 5 inches of snow, which
nice.
Is a lot for us pre-freaking Thanksgiving. The leaves were still falling off the trees, and we had snow. Leaves were still falling. We didn't even have leaf pickup yet.
Yeah, same up here. We got about 8 inches up this way, and it was fun the following day to look outside and see all this snow on the ground with leaves on top of the snow. Because they were still falling.
Yeah, and it's freaking bonkers. You're like, come on, this is ridiculous. You would think that there'd be a little bit more to go on there, a little bit more time we could get. Just relax. Just hang back, guys. But no, alas, we're kind of stuck.
Oh, well, it gives you more time for video games.
That's what I want to say, but my job ain't keeping me out. I'm still good. I say, who am I kidding? I'm still going to play the video game. Screw that noise.
Of course you are.
Because if I don't, who's going to review these games? Well, wait.
For
don't
real. Ask. You are replaceable, Purnell. I will replace you in an instant if you sass me.
A robot Nell. Robo Nell.
Robo Nell.
I was programmed to play games.
I was programmed to play video games and eat Wawa.
Damn right. It sounds just like me. The wonders of technology today.
Indeed. But speaking of games you got to review, why don't we dive into these, huh?
Let's crack them open.
All right. The first of two games you're here to talk about is called Fluffy Horde, developed and published by Turtle Juice, released November 7th on Steam for $9.99. Fluffy Horde is a 2D side-scrolling hybrid between real-time strategy and tower defense. The game revolves around a magical hyper-breeding bunny horde created by a misunderstood shaman wanderer. What the fuck is this game? Because I'm confused already.
Well, it's Hyper Bunny Sex Fest.
Hyper Bunny Sex Fest.
Yeah, that's the game.
Tell me more.
That's not the game. So the way this game is, this is I guess I want to call it sort of a tower defense, but a 2D side scroll tower defense. Well, not even side scroll. Yes, a side scroll. But anyway, the point is that the world is being infested with wild sex bunny orgy things.
Jesus.
And the idea is that you need to eradicate them before they destroy whatever you're trying to protect for that level, which is typically windmills, but sometimes it is actually a woman dressed like a bunny. She's supposed to be a princess. I don't know what she is. And the way you protect these locations is by paying gold coins for soldiers soldiers of varying types. And when you summon them down to the game, like, they each come with a different cost, and when you summon them down, they generally affect a certain area. So if it's a melee unit, it'll affect a distance to the left and to the right of the banner that indicates that it's placed there in a spot. If it is a range unit, it's based off of a certain distance away from where the banner is. So if the banner's there, the guys will be attacking, but you'll see, like, in the distance, this is how far their shots will go. And then there's, like, other guys, like, for example, my favorite little guy is a little person dressed like a carrot. He's like, eat me, eat me! And the rabbits chase after him, and if they catch him, well, they eat him. Which is an unfortunate job for a person to have. Your job is to be devoured by bunnies. But hey, you're dying so that they can be deterred away from the bridge or whatever.
What kind of benefits do you think is included in a job like that?
Oh, maybe your next of kin gets a decent life insurance policy. Maybe not even that. That wouldn't make sense, because the whole point of life insurance is that you pay for a certain number of years before it's taken out, so the money can be actually accrued. So it can't even be life insurance. What the hell would it be? Maybe they just look for people who have or mentally or just have a mental desire to be living a life of risk and foolishness. I don't know. They seek them out. And then they pay them 30 gold coins if you summon to a banner, and who then they run around in circles like, eat me! But it's a shitty job, but some daredevil wants to do it.
God bless them.
God bless the daredevils of society, wherever this bunny humping society is called. But For the purpose of this game, they are performing a noble task of diverting bunnies away from whatever target or correction. Yeah, diverting them away from or towards wherever you want them to go to. So the game is essentially the bunnies are on the map somewhere on it, either on the left side, the right side, or the center. And if you leave them alone, they will continue to mate and spawn more bunnies. So while the game is already kind of tailored towards beat the levels quickly, because a lot of the levels have like a goal of beat the level in like a minute and something seconds or 2 minutes or whatever, you also have the concern about the longer you wait, the more bunnies will reproduce, thereby resulting in you having to defeat more bunnies to end the stage. Because when you've defeated every bunny, that's when levels generally end, with the exception of escort levels, where you're trying to get a specific person to a specific location on the map. So the gameplay itself is pretty simple. Like I said, you summon units down by clicking on an icon and paying money. And then once the unit is down, you can move their banner across the map to determine where they're standing, which then in turn determines where their area of effect is, like how far they can attack out or where they attack to. The longer you wait, the more bunnies spawn. Sometimes the levels might have other things you can interact with, like you can pay a certain amount of money to raise or lower drawbridges, which sometimes may be required to keep bunnies out, or other times may be required to be lowered to get your guys to another location, such as to where bunnies are, where they can be catapulted to your windmills, because bunnies can get launched by catapults. Who built these things? I don't fucking know, but some guy did.
There's a lot of unanswered questions in this game.
They are, including who came up with the idea to make the entire thing kind of feel like it's got an air of Monty Python-esque humor floating throughout it. There's a lot of like random bits of humor that take place while you play the game, which, while cool, if you overplay the game, it will kind of get old, or at least to the point where you won't care anymore, because like you have this guy's like, the bunnies are eating the windmill. And at first I was like, ah, that's kind of chuckly. That guy's voice sounds like mine, but not. And then eventually I was like, all right, I get it. I know they're eating the windmill. It's not funny anymore. It's just a pain in the ass. How'd they get to the windmill in the first place? Whatever. But the game is as a whole, for what it is, it's enjoyable. I found it a game that I could see myself dabbling with here and there further beyond. But at the same time, I felt like as a tower defense-esque game, it didn't grab me so much. I think most of the fun for me came from trying to figure out how to hit some of the goals that the game gave you. Because most of the time, the goals were beat the level in under a minute or something like that. But then other times, there would be a level, like let's say, you know, the level might, you, because if you, as long as you have the money, and you have, and I should mention also, you can generate money by summoning farmers to chop crops, and then the chops, I guess the crops get sold, which generates revenue, which is how you get more money to buy and upgrade your units. But I feel like that, like, for example, some levels will be like, hey, you can, I can just summon a bunch of soldiers, they can go and kill bunnies and get me some points or whatever, and I can get through the level. But the goal might be only summon one guy, or don't upgrade a soldier, or something like that, and see if you can beat the level that way. And going against that instinct and trying to beat the level with the limitations that they give you, I found that to be kind of enjoyable. Okay, what the heck do they want me to do? How is this supposed to work? And it usually ends up being find the optimal route or the optimal play to pull off those goals, but that's what makes it kind of a puzzle, because you're trying to figure out what the optimal play method is to win the level with the goals that they request you to get for bonus, for, I guess, for like the bonus medals. You know, we always had that conversation, like the games with the 3-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
This game is a 3-star rating game, so it does that whole thing. But I like the graphic art style in the game. The music gets a little repetitive and old, because every level has like the one like kind of repetitive beat that goes on over it. But I did enjoy what I played of it, mostly for solving the puzzles of the stages. I feel like, I think it's a little different from the norm because of the whole side-scrolling bit. So, and that's kind of where the real-time element is, because usually, you know, you move units, they go to one specific spot, and they just kind of hold down the fort there. But in the case of this game, when you put the marker down, the guy kind of goes left and right away from it, which I guess is one thing that slightly annoyed me about the game, too. So, let's say you see a horde of bunnies in a certain spot, right? And you want to send your guy over to kick their asses. Maybe this was just how I was interpreting it, I don't know. But I was figuring, I'm going to put the banner directly on top of where the bunnies are, so that the guy will go in there and start slashing their faces. But I think the game may not necessarily intend for you to put it inside the horse so much as maybe put it in front of the horse that the guy can use, like run forward and attack or something like that. But I kept wanting to put the banner inside where they were and make him just kind of dart inside. But that's a small gripe I had. I mean, honestly, that's just something that you'll gain from when you play. You'll just decide what you want to do and make it work that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. The humor, like I said, the humor is good for a little while. You might get tired of it, but it doesn't detract from the game as a whole. And
so overall, $10. What are your thoughts on Fluffy Bunny Sex Fest?
I love that. That's our new. That's the name for it. We're going to call that the official game. Fluffy Bunny Sex Fest. I'm going to give it a try, not a deny, because of the fact that, well, it's Fluffy Bunny Sex Fest. It's a weird freaking premise. The game's not that expensive. And I got my enjoyment out of it in regards to doing things like this, like solving the 3-star goals requirements.
I want to try it just for the humor.
Yeah, like the humor, like I said, the humor is good. It's just, it gets repetitive and you can lose interest in it. But the question becomes, how long does it last for you? Like, I guess I should mention one thing that's funny about it is that one of the escort that I was telling you about is a woman dressed like a rabbit, and the game says take her to a party because that's her escort. So you're trying to get her to the party before the rabbits can eat her. And if the rabbits start approaching her, she starts typing on her cell phone like, "Help me, the rabbits are coming," or something like LOL, or like just a general, like, you know, teen garble speak or whatever. So I was like, yeah, it's just pretty humorous. I can dig this. But at the same time, I'm like, hey, if I've died here 5 times, I might already lose interest in you texting your cell phone. But yeah, that first time was still funny to me, though. So that's what I mean, though. Like, just how long will the jokes become feel good versus like, oh, I'm tired of hearing it. I just want to beat the stage now.
Well, moving from one weird game to another, the other game that you're here to talk about is called Bloody Rally Simulator, developed and published by Game Hero Interactive. It is releasing soon on Steam Early Access. Don't have a date yet for it. What goes sideways and kills people? A rally car. Compete in fun racing events where the show doesn't stop if one or two people from the audience get hit. Grab a couple of controllers and invite your friends over for hilarious split-screen racing madness with endless variety of procedurally generated tracks. Purnell, what is Bloody Rally Simulator?
Bloody Rally Simulator is a top-down racer where you control rally car to go through one or more laps around a track. That track could be circular or just a single strip of track going from the beginning to the end. Usually one lap tracks, by the way. And the idea is just playing through those races. However, the thing that makes this game what it is the fact that as you are on the track, there are moments when pedestrians, for some really dumb reason, think it's a great idea to run out on the road or run up against, because that's how dumb people do things, stupidly. And when that happens, the cars run over them, or at least attempt to run them over. When you hit pedestrians, you will get the occasional boost, bonus. Like, it might say, you know, boost bonus, so you'll drive faster, or you might get like a slight, like, I guess, like a handling bonus, where like your car might handle a little bit better, something like that. So, yeah,
because when vehicles slide on pits of blood, they magically move better.
That's probably funny, because I feel like when I didn't get any bonuses like that, I can definitely say I felt like my car was a little harder to control when I was like riding, like slamming into people, which is how I feel it should be. But then again, that doesn't really make for an arcadey racer game if it's really hard to crash into the people you want to hit. True. But when that happens, that's pretty much how it works. Like, you pretty much crash into the people, get the bonuses, and then proceed onward. As you play the game, the cars take damage, if you're doing the campaign anyway. Cars take damage, and after each race, you can spend money that you earn from the races to go to your garage and repair the cars. If you do not repair the car, and it takes all the damage it's going to take, it pretty much just stops working. Like, I probably should have done this for the purpose of review, but I never let my cars go to zero, because I want my cars to function. So I always paid the money to keep them in tip-top shape. But the game's description is that if you let the car not get repaired and then get destroyed in the race, it becomes unusable. I'm going to wager that the game probably gives you an exorbitant cost to get the car up and running again, though. But then again, it is a campaign, so it's maybe it's possible that the card just forever stays gone if you're just that careless about taking care of your stuff. Don't be careless about taking care of your stuff. All right?
Yeah, that'll teach you.
But as you play the game, you unlock other cards, too. These cards are typically unlocked by two things. One, unlocking the previous card. Two, winning a certain number of races. So you might find yourself thinking, well, I'm just unlocking races left and right by completing the races. But in the end, unless you actually get first place in multiple races, you won't actually end up getting more cars. Though there's also race requirements for winning to get to the other ones, too. But for the most part, I feel like it was pretty generous on those. Like, I don't even think I had to be first place. I feel like you just had to get one of the top places to get unlock the race. But as you win the races, you get more money, which you can use to purchase more cars, which you purchase by unlocking them first. And the game keeps a running tally of how many cars you own, how many races you've won, how many people you've murdered, you freaking monster.
I was just going to ask if it kept track of that. Thank God.
It does. Thank heavens for keeping track of murderous tendencies. if you get tired of running around with the campaign mode, there's also a track editor in the game, which allows you to change up things like the track style, like the style of the map around the track. You can add like various trees and stuff on the road. It's not a complicated editor, but it's not a complicated game. It's a pretty simple game, but it's essentially designed to make it so, hey, I want to make a little quick track so my friends can play on it. You can do that, and then you can share it on like the Steam like community group that you can share all the stuff on. So you have access to that. Though for me, though the premise is fun, and I am a big fan of quick hit games that are just like for a quick burst of fun, I feel like the procedurally generated bit and the fact that they put like a pretty modest track editor in there brings with it a slight problem too, which makes me feel like most of the tracks play exactly the same in a sense. Like, think about, say, some other top youngies you might be familiar with. Remember like Super Off-Road?
Mm-hmm.
Super Off-Road, you remember those tracks are all pretty small. They all fit on one screen, in fact.
Yeah.
But when you played Super Off-Road, you had things that made tracks feel different. Like, you had moguls, you had various dunes, you had moments where the tracks kind of crossed over each other and did crazy things that way. Like, you may hit like a mega, when I say cross, I mean like hit like a jump. You jump over the track, and if you screw up the jump, you fall into the lower level of the track, stuff like that. Small little perfections, oil spills, anything. And even beyond that, you could, like, say, upgrade your car with, like, the various, you know, goods, which I guess is kind of covered here with the ability to buy new cars, which have various stats like weight and the hit point total and things of that nature, which affect how the car controls, of course. But it feels like there's a lot of sameness going on here. And while that would be good for, like, you know, the occasional play here and there, I feel like with lengthy play, it would get old pretty fast, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a tough call there. I'm hoping, because you said this is still kind of in beta too, like they're still working on it, and it's like it's not ready just yet. There's more to come.
It's not out yet. It will be releasing to early access. So even when it does finally launch, it's going to be in early access. So if you have feedback, if you have suggestions on how to improve this game, let's hear it, because I'm sure the developers are eager to get whatever feedback they can. What would you do to improve the courses? Would you go with more hand-designed courses, or do you think the procedural generation works?
I feel like, and for all I know, maybe some of the campaign levels were designed by them, but I feel like, one, some of the courses should be designed by the developers to make you feel like you're overcoming their challenge, and it makes you feel like there's a bit more specific polish put into it, because you might have experienced this in other games that are randomly procedurally generated, but a lot of times when you play procedurally generated games, it just feels soulless. It just feels like, hey, here's a thing. They just figured that, you know, you're always going to have a circular room. You're always going to have like this narrow corridor that leads to a circular room. Like, it loses its it loses the soul that comes from like actual creation.
Yeah.
But when you have some actually manually created levels, you can kind of pick that out. In addition to that, I feel like they should add some more obstacles that affect the track, like oil slicks that can make you spin out. I don't know. I know mogul. This isn't the kind of game for like moguls, most likely, or like the pits or anything. But I don't know if that's something they can do down the line. I say they should add something like that to the game. But those are my main concerns, because I like quick pick up and play racing games. I like the fact you can kind of get cars from the state, the garage, and kind of give them little custom paint jobs. I wish there was music in the actual races because the menu music is pretty good, but I just feel like it needs more to make it feel like this is the racing game I want to play when I'm going to choose between these five racing games that are accessible to me right now.
Yeah.
And it can't necessarily just be about running over people for points, which don't get me wrong. I'm no prude. I am totally okay with running over people for points. I still remember have memories of Carmageddon. I ain't messing around. Shit. It's just, I'm just saying, you definitely need a little bit more there to make it feel like, hey, this track feels, this feels special. This feels like a good special track. Here are some obstacles aside from just like, here's some trees on the side of the road. Give me some stuff to work with here.
Yeah. Well, hopefully as the game progresses, we'll be able to take another look at it later on and you can let us know then what you think of it. But for now, is this a game worth keeping an eye on?
I would say it's worth keeping an eye on because again, like I was mentioning earlier how like I used to like games like Carmageddon and stuff, and I can't think of too many games that even went back to try to look at that kind of style again. This game does. I would like to see it do more. So if they're working on it and doing more with it, I would like to see what they're doing with it, and maybe you would like to see more of it too.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Hot diggity day.
Purnell, it is always a blast having you on. Do you have any final thoughts on either of those games or in life in general, whatever?
Keep on moving forward because, God, geez, we're finally coming towards the end of the holiday releases, which maybe it's just me, but does this feel like a much lighter holiday release season from previous years to you?
They're all in February now.
February? Huh. Now I'm going to keep an eye on it because now you got me thinking about that. Though I do remember this time, I remember last year, or rather earlier this year, we were talking about how like games were like hitting, coming out like crazy in February and January.
Yeah, maybe you're February right. Maybe. Is fucked.
So now I got to look for games because have you already looked at a list of titles that are coming out in February? Or are you going off of like previous scenarios or previous years?
I'm going off of everything that was announced at E3, like Metro's coming out, Anthem's coming out, Crackdown's coming out.
Oh, wait, Crackdown's coming in February?
Yeah, 15th.
Woohoo! About damn time! I'm ready! I'm ready for Kills for Skills! Or is it Skills for Kills? That's what it was. Skills for Kills, Agent. I'm looking for that to come back.
Oh, Purnell, you are crazy, but we are moving on. The next game to talk about is called Psychedelica of the Black Butterfly, developed by Idea Factory, published by Intra Games. It released November 15th on Steam for $29.99. Awakening in a mysterious mansion, her first frantic thoughts are, where am I, and more importantly, who am I? She encounters several young men in the same predicament, trapped and missing their memories. To survive, they must hunt black butterflies and claim kaleidoscope shards from the horrific monster surrounding them. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and this is what she has to say. Psychedelica of the Black Butterfly is an otome visual novel, which means you play as a girl trying to get a boyfriend. Joe, 90% of your viewers just got up and left. Good job. For, like, the two of you left, maybe, you play as Ai Minato, or you can change your name to whatever you want. She wakes up in a mansion with no memories and soon comes across a pack of different boys, also with no memories. They can't leave the mansion until they repair a magical kaleidoscope. At least so says messages they all received from the mysterious master of the manor. Some things are so obvious in this that I don't want to spoil them, but it's really fucking obvious so goddamn long before you're told that, yes, that's how it is. But it turns out, you're all in the land of the in-between. You're not quite dead, but you're near death. This is told you about maybe a third of the way through, but within like 20 minutes of the game, it's pretty damn obvious. However, the kaleidoscope can return you to life, hence you have to repair it, so the master says anyway. Also, he's obviously the bad guy, but you also don't have any choice in the matter, so you collect the parts anyways. Each boy has their personality. The thing about Otome games is that the boys are almost completely just a single personality trait. For instance, there's the loudmouth pervert who's always hitting on you and trying to semi-force himself on you while playing it off as a joke. The super serious guy who thinks everyone is beneath him, including you. The super nice guy who only exists to be the super loving, caring person and has no personality outside of that. The jerk and the super quiet one. That is the summary of all the guys in this. Play it and meet each guy. Tell me if I'm not spot on for each of them. I would usually say that detracts from the game, but for romance, visual novels, that's fairly common, sadly even more so for otomes. Not sure why, but there is low character depth in them on average. The music and voice acting are both really damn good. The artwork is fairly nice, but sadly there's not much of it. The overall concept of the story is interesting because of the lore, the kaleidoscope, how the in-between and the master of the manor all came to be, and all that's really cool. Some of the character interactions are emotional, however most of the time character interactions are meh because they're stereotypes. You can literally look at them and tell what they are before they say anything. The worst offender to me is the pervy guy because he's just like this damn so close to a damn sexual assault half the time, and the rest of the time he's sexually harassing your character. Really did not like him. Half the shit he did is not acceptable in society and should have gotten his ass beat on a regular basis. Cute. But there's not a lot to say without giving away bits of the story. It's an otome. I hope I'm saying that word right. I'm always paranoid I'm not. It's an otome. You're a cute, weak girl. Not sure why, but that's always the case. But by being that way, you net the guy you like and you get through whatever the story bit there is. The important thing is the guy falls in love with you. Obviously, being gay as hell, this doesn't ring with my core since I have no interest in any of these men. But once more, the story outside the grabbing the guy bits was fairly interesting to me. Game takes about 15 to 20 hours to complete every possible route of the 12 routes. For $30 on Steam, if you're into these kinds of games, yeah, you'll like this and it's worth it. If you're not, this isn't going to change your mind. It's the same old, same old. However, the story's good, so I say pick it up on a sale if it's $10 to $15. So yeah, it's worth getting, but the price point is determinable. Is that a word? I don't know. By whether or not you specifically like otomes, because otomes are to visual novels what dime store romance novels are to good books. All right, sounds good, and let us move on. All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Rockets, 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 developed and published by Radio Games, released November 15th on the Switch for $4.99. Rockets fire rockets at rockets in this action arcade arena combat gorgeous festival of fireworks. It's dogfighting meets figure skating in space with local multiplayer and single player fast-paced action modes, plus a zen mode where rockets learn to love. Checking this one out, Chris Taylor, tell me about Rockets, Rockets, Rockets.
All right, well, what can I say that the copy text hasn't already said?
Rockets learn to love.
That is indeed kind of how it goes. Okay, so Rockets, Rockets, Rockets is a familiar take on an arcade, a classic arcade. I hate the word classic now. Why? Because of the book Ready Player One.
I haven't read it.
I read it just to listen to a podcast that makes fun of it.
Good reason to read something.
It's bad. I loaned it to somebody so that they could see how bad it is. So more people are reading the book because of how bad it is. Anyway, but enough about books. We're not talking about books.
It's about video games.
Yeah. So this takes an old ass arcade game formula. I think old ass is better than classic. And it basically is the kind of almost Asteroids like almost you know, if you've played a game like Solar Jetman or Subterranea on the Genesis. Nobody's played any of those, but it's basically a rocket dogfight. So you start the game in one of many maps, which you can choose right at the beginning. Actually, you can choose a ton of stuff in this game. We'll get back to that in a second, but you start on a launch pad along with either one to three other human players, or you can have, you know, players replaced with a computer, and fight against the computer. And you start off on your launch pads, and you basically can fire off onto the launch pads, turn around and start, you know, firing at the other enemies, at the other players. You have three different kinds of shots. You got your missiles, which are straightforward. You've got your mines, which kind of float in the air, if you will, and, you know, can be run into. And you got your missiles, which kind of drop down onto the player from a sort of different angle. You can either shoot them one at a time instantly, or you can hold down the button for like a second and then it will just start barraging that certain weapon at the other player.
Oh, God.
Which, yeah, the barrage is fun to use, but the game moves so quickly that that second of delay makes it very hard to pull off a successful barraging. Mm. So, yeah, strategy. The whole point of this, of course, your shoulder buttons also by default are your shield buttons. So, you can sort of block the enemy fire rather than simply dodging the whole time. So that's kind of nice. But yeah, all this to basically, hit the other guy. Everybody should, unless you handicap the computer, which you have the option to, everybody starts off with 3 hits. And, when you hit the other, dudes for 3 shots, then they go down and you get a point, and then you just keep playing. You basically stop when you want to. There seems to be no story mode or like different levels or anything like that. You basically just choose your field of play and then just keep playing until you're tired of points.
Nice.
For that reason, and also for some supplemental reading I did, it seems like this game was kind of built from the ground up to be a multiplayer game, and then they just sort of added on a single player campaign, of course, for people like me with no friends. So that's really cool. And so you got your single player and multiplayer. It's basically like that. So that's the vanilla, meat and potatoes, bread and butter style gameplay. So what they add to that is now a Zen mode where you, and suspiciously, you could also pick computer AI players for this as well, up to 3 other human players can start in any of the stages. And you launch your rocket, and instead of shooting missiles and bombs at each other, you just paint the background.
Oh.
The different face buttons make different colors, and you can use your swerviness to make swirls. You can, like, you know, dot the landscape if you prefer. Basically, you just roll around the stage and paint it however you like, as long as you like. So
sounds relaxing.
Yeah, that's Zen mode. I don't really know that if I had 3 people over that actually wanted to play a video game on the couch, if that's what we would end up doing. But at least not initially. I feel like, though, sometimes it might end up that way. Hey, do you guys want to paint a level with some rockets? Hell yeah.
Sure, why not?
It's 7 a.m. Let's do it. I'm very drunk. This sounds delightful. Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's very straightforward and very simple. Again, you can choose everything in the game, like from the size of your rocket to the size of your shields to the amount of sparklies that come out of your ship whenever you propulse yourself. You can even, and this is my favorite option, you can turn on, I think it's the bloom lighting is what they call it. So, yeah, if you turn it all the way off, then the game just looks straightforward. It's grid-based, so it kind of looks like something that should have been on the Virtual Boy or something. But if you turn on bloom lighting, of course, you get that slight sheen on everything that kind of makes it look more like a real thing that's still fake. But if you turn it like all the way up or start to turn it all the way up, it just completely messes up the screen where it looks like somebody just smeared Vaseline all over it. And it just looks ugly and completely unplayable. But nice. I love that they give you that option to make the game totally ugly.
Which for no is good. Reason. Options are good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you could have a clean game or a very, very messy game.
Nice. So overall, $5 on this one. What do you think of it?
I mean, $5 for novelty factor alone, I'd say that it's worth a shot, you know, buying it and sort of having it in your pocket to, you know,
be like, literally, hey, with the Switch.
Yeah, exactly. Literally. But like having that one kind of in your pocket for the next get together and be like, hey, y'all want to play something really cool. I think it's really. Yeah, exactly. Like even just to show people how you can mess it up. It's $5 as an entry point is, you know, it's such a small amount of money that you might as well just get it and have it to show people. And I found the single player campaign pretty fun. And although Zen mode wasn't the best in one player, I like that they gave me the option of doing it one player and just painting a wall by myself.
Nice. I wrote a note on my desk, wrote down buy rockets, rockets, rockets.
There you go. Yeah, it's worth buying. And I think it's got enough novelty factors to keep it interesting. You know, it's not like one of those games that you'd spend $50 on if it was a physical game. But in case it comes out from like limited run or something, then I may eat those words. Like, we have a limited edition physical version for $50. Comes with an art book that and a pack of crayons. And you'd be like, yes.
Well, I guess I'm buying Rockets, Rockets, Rockets physical.
Yeah. Do it. Get those crayons.
Limited to 1,000, so you got to get it.
And only 200 crayons.
Oh, Lord. But we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Toast Time Smash Up, developed and published by Force of Habit, released November 16th on the Switch for $9.99. Interdimensional time blob beasties have sailed the cosmos in pursuit of spare time, and now on an idyllic Monday morning, they found it, tasted it, assume the role of Terry, toast ejecting recoil and reload system. God.
The Y stands for system.
Pretty much, yeah. A humble and solitary toaster with an uncontrollable love for English breakfasts, hats, and scheduling, and lay the table for your unexpected guests. Chris, what the hell is this game?
I don't even know after you've read all that, and I played it. the copy text on that is so... Anyway, this is a British game, if you didn't know. And if there's one thing that one can say about the British, it's that they are obsessed with breakfast. And if you see an English breakfast, it does look like it can assault you. So that's what this game is about. It is about defeating enemies with breakfast foods. Naturally... Yeah, naturally, I was very interested in this one because I love bread and I love toast and breakfast.
Okay, you're not the only one interested in this. Like 2-3 days ago, Purnell was like, hey, do you know anything about this game? I'm like, well, now that you mention it, Chris Taylor is going to be covering it. So he wants to know what you think as well.
Okay, cool. So toast time. Yeah, you so it's, again, kind of follows a little bit of an old-ass gaming formula in the sense that you are a toaster. Your name is Terry. That's not very important. I actually had to look it up, although it's in the game. You're a toaster, and basically, because I guess you're into scheduling, there's a clock on the level of the playing field, and... you have to keep all of the enemies, which I suppose are blobs, you know, because the it's throwback graphics, so you can't exactly tell what everything is. You just kind of have to take their word for it. But these things are basically in the stage trying to get to that clock, and if they touch that clock, you lose. So your goal is basically to blast these things with toast and other bready products until... the timer, like until the actual clock strikes, I suppose breakfast time, and then everybody has a nice breakfast and then moves on to the next stage. Nice. So the thing about it, and this is something they advertise, is the, what is it? The recoil physics.
Yes.
So popping, like, as you know, because you have a toaster that flies across rooms, like everyone, that when a toast pops out of a toaster, the recoil action forces that toaster downward. And if you were to lay a toaster on its side and then that warm bread comes out of it, it would launch that toaster across the room. So just like that real life thing, that's what happens in this video game. So as you're flinging toast at enemies, let's say you flung toast at the very ground upon which the enemies are falling and where you usually stand your ground, it will launch your toaster into the air, and you will start to float back down, whereupon you can then... it's kind of like a twin-stick shooter in that, you know, one stick moves Actually, I'm sorry. No, one stick doesn't move. The right stick aims the trajectory of your toast. And so basically you use opposite force in order to move your toaster around the playing field. A little bit like a game I reviewed a long time ago called Bouncy Bob. But this one's a little more elegant.
And filled with toast.
And filled with so much toast. So basically, as you shoot these enemies, you launch yourself into the air, aim that laser beam down at the enemies and blast them with that toast. Keep them away from that clock. Of course, sometimes crates are going to fall from the sky. You want to shoot those crates because as you collect crates, they unlock other breads. Ooh. That you can. Yeah. And as you unlock other breads, those crates will contain those breads, and then you will have a shotgun blast of bagels, a baguette that when you shoot it into the ground like a spear, it then explodes, and the shrapnel of breadcrumbs will defeat the enemies. All kinds of temporary and carbohydrate heavy attacks at your disposal.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it actually becomes really fun. And by the time I got to the end of the first area, the stages actually started becoming real legit challenging. Because like I said, enemies are just coming out of the sky. They're coming out of both sides of the screen. Sometimes they'll have these little trampolines that kind of fling them right at that clock, and you have to get them in midair. Otherwise, you lose. So there's all kinds of high energy stuff going on, around this whole proceeding. And the cool part is that it gets even crazier, as I understand, because again, I don't have any friends, in the multiplayer mode, where you can have up to four toasters on the screen at the same time, everybody trying to blast each other with the same rules in play. So again, this seems like the kind of game that was maybe built on the multiplayer aspect, and then the one player aspect was just kind of well, we better make this an adventure too.
Very possible.
Possible, but actually the first player mode in this one is, I think, a little better put together. For instance, every single level, and as I understand, there's 54 levels in the single player game. Every single level has a different music theme.
Oh, wow.
It's all really good sort of blippy bloopy music from the Game Boy era. Everything kind of looks like, I want to say Commodore 64 style graphics. It's not quite NES. It's a little more computery. And considering the developer is British, I'm pretty sure that's what they were going for. I found it delightful. And although it's a bit monochrome, the action flows really well. And of course, those recoil physics are very solid. So you can really plan on, precise attacks. Also, and this is probably the most important part, you can actually stop yourself at any point while you're flying through the air by hitting the brakes on the B button or one of the shoulder buttons. And that will allow you to then continue shooting toast from a single location. So you don't always have to rely on that sort of Matrix style, shooting things on the move.
Yeah.
So it's really accessible in that way, in the sense that it lets you stop for us. It's about 5 seconds, I think, that you can stop in midair and then just, lay on them.
Well, that sounds absolutely ridiculous. So for $10, how ridiculous is it?
$10, I actually would consider this a must buy. Rockets is good, but I feel like it's stronger as possibly a multiplayer experience. Toast Time, there's a lot of love went into this game. And plus, it came out many years ago on Steam and all that, and it won lots of awards. So clearly lots of people love this game. I think that it gets by on its the strength of its single player game alone. And I really want to play it with some other people now, because I would like to, because it's also an easy sell. It's like, hey, y'all want to play a game where we fight each other with toast?
I do. So my note has been updated to Mark and Toast Time.
Yeah, both of these games are well worth your dollars. That's my word on that. I said Toast Time, I really appreciated a lot of the finer details that went into the level designs and things like that. So for that reason, it's you know, a real strong recommendation. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Chris, it is always a pleasure having you on. Thanks so much for coming on and joining me. Thanks again to everyone who came on to do their reviews. A lot of people on this one. I like when I have a bunch of people. It means more work for me in editing.
So. But it mitigates the loneliness of existence.
It does.
Yay.